This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
The Beltway Blitz comes your way in just a minute here on Grant and Danny. Welcome back. You're locked into The Fan. In 1 hour, Jay Gruden joins the show. We will get his prescription for Washington's issues. Three straight losses, including a really bad one now. This is the first ugly loss for Dan Quinn and company at the hands of the Cowboys at home as an 11-point favorite. It just does not happen that they are favored by that many points at home, and I guess now we know why. Two quick things. One, during the break, it became a story in this studio that Danny is not familiar with StarCrunch. He has no file on the classic Little Debbie treat or whatever company makes that. I ate zero of those because I hated them, but probably saw 200 of those get consumed around me as a kid just because every time at soccer or whatever, someone's passing out treats, that's an option. And I showed him a picture of it. You've never seen
I'd never seen that. Yeah. So my era, it's regular old, you know, your orange slices, granola bars were always a thing post game with like a Gatorade or something like that. And now for my kids now, I've never seen those handed out.
You know a fudge round?
Yeah. I couldn't picture one, but I've definitely heard or seen a fudge round.
I could picture one. Fudge rounds are the best. I would always choose that over a StarCrunch. Mm-hmm. And then also, I didn't get to do this in the double play, so we'll come back to it later. But Gladiator 2 was an absolute blast.
And oh, nice.
If you liked Gladiator 1, and who didn't, go see it. And don't let anybody tell you that you shouldn't because this thing wasn't exactly right. They can kick rocks. Do you want to be entertained and eat popcorn? Go see the movie. It's awesome. With that out of the way, let's get to the Beltway Blitz. We start on the gridiron with the locals and our buddy Mitch Tischler, who was just a few seats away from me in the box yesterday as we watched the Cowboys play really badly and still somehow win. Mitch, worst part of yesterday was?
Well, I would have thought the worst part of the last 2 days was you talking about Star Crunches, because if we're being honest, it's the zebra cake and the Nutty Buddy that are the two best of the Little Debbie. But the worst part of it was
the Nutty Buddy is strong, by the way. I don't think Star Crunch was Little Debbie, was it? I think it was like another brand.
Oh, well, I'm just thinking about childhood snacks, and that ranks real high up the list.
Attaboy. Darius is telling me, by the way, it was Little Debbie, so I stand corrected.
There we go. Most disappointing part was the offense. I mean, to start out slow like that, to have, you know, four drives start, you know, in not necessarily plus territory as in the Cowboys territory, but outside of your own red zone, and to only get 3 points out of that, and to, you know, obviously watch Brian Robinson go down again is tough. I think you have to start asking some real questions about B-Rob and reliability moving forward. I think he's a great player. I love him. I think he's a huge part of this offense. But we're going on multiple years now where he seems to get dinged up, nicked up, beat up, you know, pretty much every other week, and it's becoming a problem with the consistency on this offense with not having a run game.
What's going on with the line? Early on, it was this, you know, renaissance. It was this amazing strength for guys that, you know, weren't necessarily as heralded. Cosme had some pedigree, but, you know, it's a rookie splitting time and a couple guys that are ready available in coming in via the offseason. Andrew Wiley, who was maligned. Now, all of a sudden, it looks like it's the group maybe we thought they were before the year, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think a lot of it comes down to play calling and offensive scheme, because early in the season, you saw a lot of the quick game. You saw them get the ball out to their playmakers in their hands early on, quickly, 1, 2, 3-step drops, quick, get the ball out. And that obviously helps an offensive line that isn't, you know, the strongest on paper individually. But part of it is just as a big group, they are super beat up now. But, you know, it's the NFL. Guys are beat up across the board. I'd like to see this Commanders offense get back to what we saw early in the season with a lot more of the quick game, get the ball out. I think that you're starting to see, you know, people want to complain about the Cliff Kingsbury offense, and, you know, it's too early in the season to kind of get to that point. I think there can be a reconciliation when we get to the end of the year and look back to figure out kind of what went right, what went wrong. But I think that you're seeing this offense evolve into more of, to be honest, what we saw last year with Eric Bieniemy, a lot more 3, 5, 7-step drops longer drops obviously takes more time. You got to pass block for longer, and they're not even hitting the shots downfield anymore. So I don't know that it's necessarily, you know, working the way that Cliff Kingsbury and Dan Quinn and everyone wants it to do. But to me, I think to help the offense, you got to get the run game going. You got to get the quick game going. You got to make these defensive lines pause for a second and not just put their fingers in the dirt and know that they're going back and they can go get Jaden, you know, 5-7 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and this kind of goes hand in hand maybe with the answer you just gave, but Daniels was outstanding running the ball yesterday. It felt a little bit like the Tampa game in week one to me, though, where I loved what he did as a runner, and I thought the passing game was horrible until the final 5 minutes. I mean, how much of that do you think is on him, and why can't they quite get him on track here? I don't want to quite say it's half the season, but you're talking about, like, the Carolina game was the seventh game, so it's like six before that and five after that now.
Right, and if you look at this season through the first five or six games, you think that this team is going to the Super Bowl and that, you know, this could be the best Commanders, Redskins, Washington football, Burgundy and Gold team, whatever you want to call them, you know, in a long time. You look at the last 5 weeks and it feels like what we've seen for the last, you know, 20 years here. So I do think that takes a little bit of a, you know, big picture, you know, not being a prisoner of the moment type thing. My one worry with Jaden that we started to see is early in the season, he was making really good decisions. He wasn't putting the ball in peril. He was tucking it when he needed to. And this week, I think, or at least this week, I started to see, you know, some problems with his decision-making. Starting off with the interception on the throw to Brian Robinson, you know, B-Rob is blanketed in coverage on a quick little screen pass, whatever it was supposed to be. Why even throw the ball there? Best case scenario, he catches it and gets tackled for a 3 yard less. Throw that ball at his feet, move on, you know, live another day. And then, you know, right at the end of the first half, they're running that 2 minute drill. And with whatever it was, 50 seconds, just under a minute left, they have a 3rd and 9. And you see Jaden roll out to the right, which is fine. And if he ends up having to tuck the ball and run, so be it. You know, he looked good running the ball, as you guys talked about earlier. But instead, he veers out of bounds and stops the clock, allows the Cowboys to save a timeout. The Commanders have to punt. If so facto, we see Benjamin St. Juice get beat deep like we're used to seeing now. And the Cowboys are able to put 3 points on the board, you know, right before halftime. So, you know, a lot of times with rookie quarterbacks, one of the big things you're looking for is kind of decision-making and kind of the head game and how they're evolving as the season goes. And you want to see that continue to grow. And I'm not going to take this one game and say, oh, man, Jaden's regressing, this is terrible, or even this 3 or 4 game stretch. But it is something that I've kind of put a little note in my notes app for as to, hey, pay attention to this because it is something that you would like to see getting better, not getting worse as we move through this season.
Mitch, thank you, buddy. Have a great week.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, guys.
You got it, my friend. Hit that NFL sounder, Darius. Our pal Mike Jones writes for The Athletic about the NFL. That's why he's going to talk about the NFL. Mike, I feel like a bunch of weird things happened this week. And maybe it's just that Houston lost to Tennessee. But I feel like some games were closer than they should have been. Cleveland got it started for us on Thursday. Why weirdness around the league this week?
I don't know why this week specifically, but you're definitely right. You know, I think that you've got some teams that have like a little bit of a sense of urgency. You got some teams that are banged up here and there. You know, then you throw weather into it. It was just a wacky week for no rhyme or reason. You even had teams that, you know, it doesn't help the Cowboys to win games, you know, and there they were winning a game. The Panthers were close to winning a game. What are you guys doing trying? But, you know, we saw these, you know, close games come down to the wire. You know, even the Browns, I mean, that didn't help them to win that game there. But I think you see there were some trap games. Then also there were some divisional games. And whenever you have divisional opponents, you can throw the records out. And it's going to be a scrappy, you know, knockdown drag out with a lot of different divisions. And so, you know, that's kind of some of the reasons why. And then some of it, you know, is just weirdness going on.
Mike, Bryce Young looks a lot better at this point since getting back in there for Carolina. Can he do enough this year to be the guy going into the offseason, or do you think they've already got to pivot where they're drafting and go get somebody else?
No, well, I mean, the problem is there's not really anybody else to go out there. This isn't a really strong quarterback draft class, you know. And look, you invested to have this pick, to take this kid. You have to be patient. You have to give him more around him. Imagine if they had given him a full workload in the preseason, rather than, you know, limiting him to one, you know, series for all the preseason like he was some veteran quarterback, or sticking with him rather than benching him after week two, I think that you maybe would have seen more progress. They panicked. You had a first-year head coach who's trying to make sure he doesn't lose the locker room. It was just all mismanagement, the way that they handled it. I think that, yes, we're seeing him make progress. As a young quarterback, you learn by doing a lot of times. And if you don't have a lot around you, you can feel that pressure. You have to make every single play. Well, I think he's understanding now, okay, maybe the play is not there. It's not bad to throw it away. It's not bad to tuck it and run. And so I think that he can still be the guy there. Again, they've got a lot of work to do. They have a lot of holes on their roster. But it's not going to do them any favors to move on from him and reach on another quarterback and still have a young guy in the same situation with a subpar roster.
Same question about a sophomore, Will Levis, with the Titans. He had a decent little game, 278 and a pair, but he threw a terrible pick six. He seems to do that all the time. They're coming to Washington. They're 3-8. He turns the ball over a lot. I mean, his bad is so bad, but then his good is really good. Like, he makes crazy throws. He's got a little Anthony Richardson to him in, like, the extremes. Richardson yesterday was, like, 11 of 28 or something, but made this unbelievable 40-yard completion. What do you make of Levis?
You know, his decision-making isn't great. And from what I've talked to people, they kind of wonder, like, how does he process information? Because it does not look like he's processing what he's seeing. There's times he's pulling the trigger, and you're just like, dude, did you not see the guy, the linebacker, standing right there in front of your wide receiver? But then he had done better when he came back from injury as far as taking care of the football a little bit more. And then, you know, he kind of is very much a roller coaster. Now, they feel like they've got to live with the growing pains there and that it benefits them to play him right now. I think that, yeah, look, he had the bad pick six. Yeah, I think he took, you know, like 7-8 sacks. You know, you got to get rid of the football. But they are seeing signs of growth there. I'm not saying it's going to be amazing. I'm not saying that he's going to blossom into a franchise savior. But they see progress, and that's good for him. It's good for them. This is very much a retooling, rebuilding type of year for them where they're just looking for positives to build on going forward.
Mike, quick one here. Fill in the blank. The Denver Broncos are?
A good team that might make the playoffs. You know, they are exceeding expectations. You know, Bo Nix has been the perfect fit for Sean Payton in that offense. And, yeah, I think that they have a real shot of making the playoffs. Not going to say they're going to go very far, but just getting there.
By the way, has Nix caught Daniels in the Rookie of the Year, you think?
He's reeling him in there. They need to snap this losing streak here, and Cliff Kingsbury needs to figure out how to retweak his offense and develop a counterpunch. But if they keep playing the way they are right now, yes, the Knicks will overtake Jaden Daniels.
Wow. I mean, it seems like basically Daniels was electric early. Knicks really right. struggled. And it's kind of been the opposite over the last 5 weeks. But, you know, the recency bias is now, you look at the betting markets, Daniels is a slight favorite and Knicks is basically even money. Mike, thanks, buddy. We appreciate you.
All right, see you guys. Thanks for having me.
See you,
still a third or so of the season to go. So if Daniels won round one, Knicks won round two, still TBD. Although it is funny, I tweeted about this today, and a bunch of people were like screaming at me like, who cares? Nobody cares about the Rookie of the Year award. It's like, wait, that's all we were saying 4 weeks ago.
Some people care.
A lot of people were just stuffing the ballots for the Pepsi Rookie of the Week when he was like, you know, having okay games. You guys cared then. People don't care as much now. It's funny how that works.
It's interesting.
Let's keep it moving. Back to the Commanders and our guy Nick Akridge of PFF. Nick, what did you see when you studied the game from yesterday?
Just some poor execution on the offensive side. I think a poor handling of, you know, what Dallas was going to do pressure-wise to them. And I think it just kind of took them – I don't know if they ever really kind of adjusted to it. And it took too long. And then kind of in the fourth quarter, once Dallas kind of sat back, you saw the offense start to, you know, really kind of go. But I think it was just kind of just poor execution is what we've been seeing these past couple of weeks. And I think a poor game plan overall.
What's the biggest reason I know there's a bunch of them, there's a million different things, but what's the biggest reason why their offense all of a sudden is not effective? I could live with a time, Nick, where they're playing good defenses who play well, who stop a lot of offenses. Dallas's defense objectively stinks, and through 55 minutes yesterday, Washington had 200 yards of offense, and I think it was 9 points. What's the biggest reason for the drop-off here in your mind?
I think right now it's pressure, but specifically interior pressure. You know, over the last 3 weeks, I think we've all seen the offense kind of take us down a little bit. You know, the Steelers did a great job with, you know, their five-man rushes of you know, winning on the interior with guys like Cam Hayward. Same with the Eagles. They didn't blitz as much, but they have guys in the interior that keep winning. And interior pressure is always tougher for a quarterback to deal with. You can't step up in the pocket. You have to escape, and that causes pressure elsewhere. But the Cowboys did a really good job of understanding exactly how to attack Washington's offensive line, and that's intact the interior with, you know, a bunch of blitzes through the A and B gaps, and they lined up Micah Parsons to D tackle to go one-on-one with Cosby and Allegretti, and it was a nightmare. They couldn't deal with it. That kind of causes your quarterback to get a little skittish in the pocket, bail a little bit early, always hit that first thing that he thinks is open. So right now I think the biggest thing is pressure, but specifically interior pressure.
Speaking of interior pressure and taking over from the inside, what is going on with 27-year-old Daron Payne? He's still in his prime. They gave him all the money. I know there's no Allen and the ends are gone, and maybe that's the answer. But, man, oh, man. I mean, yesterday he had an empty calorie sack where Cooper Rush, I almost called him Cooper Cup, Cooper Rush just kind of waddled around in the backfield to buy, you know, kill some time and then fell down, and he got that sack. So he's now got 2.5 on the year. But he was barely noticeable against two guards that were backups yesterday. Like, where is Daron Payne? He's got 4 hits on the quarterback all year.
Yeah, it's been rough really for a couple years now, ever since that 12-sack season for Daron. And one of the biggest things in terms of what we're grading is missed tackles. He's led the league the past 2 years in missed tackles from interior defensive linemen, which has kind of hurt his production and grade and whatnot. Missing a bunch of tackles again. He's at 8 this year. He had 11 last year, 12 in 2022. So that's kind of a big thing in terms of, you know, run defense. And then when you're getting towards the quarterback, you're missing tackles and stuff like that. But this year, he's not even really kind of consistently getting back there like he was in 2021 and 2022. I'm not entirely sure what's missing. Not having a guy like Allen right next to him definitely does not help. You know, the lack of threats on the edge is not going to help him. He's going to see more double teams. But, you know, interior guys are going to face a lot of double teams. They just have. And he's faced them in the past and has won. So not entirely sure what's going on there. But it definitely has not been great.
Nick, thank you, buddy. Have a great week.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks,
man.
That's Nick Akridge of PFF. Let's drill down on Jaden Daniels' performance from yesterday. And also, I think it's official now. We can put the rib issue to bed after how he ran around yesterday. We'll get into that on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
With another third down conversion, 3rd and 3. It is Daniels off the left side with room inside the 10 to the end zone, touchdown. 17 yards, Jaden Daniels with the day's first touchdown.
Daniels ran for 75 yards yesterday. Third best rushing performance of his young career. In fact, officially, on the day, 7 attempts for 74 and 1 touchdown. That 23-yarder you just heard Joe Davis call on Fox. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Danny, I think you'll agree with me, but I guess I should just ask you without putting words in your mouth. It was not a pretty day throwing the football. How could it have been if he had 92 passing yards, net passing with 5 to play?
Yeah.
Now, that's not all him. There were some drops in there. I mentioned the numbers earlier today. I think this is important to acknowledge, right? This is not to make an excuse for Jaden Daniels, but this is data. Via PFF, weeks 1 through 7, there were 3 statistical drops for Washington. From weeks 8 through 12, there have been 10 drops. And fans, anytime they see a player get near the football or touch the football, they assume it's a drop. there's actually a way to quantify it, which is kind of within the catch radius on the frame, you know, not broken up by a defender. And by definition, they have 13 on the year, 10 of which have come since week 8.
And I would also add, there are probably some balls that don't go in the book as drops, right? Where you'd go, that's not an easy catch, but it's the NFL. Like, we really could have used some of those. Where maybe a defender's draped on you or it's in traffic, but a couple of those balls where you go, I know it's not a drop, but damn.
Yeah, that's kind of my point.
Yeah.
I mean, officially, via PFF, the way they count it, 10 in that time. And as I said, fans think, you know, there were 7 against Pittsburgh where they may have actually said, by definition, there were 3 or 4 actual drops in that game. So that's part of it. I think another thing you're seeing is his completion percentage has come down and some of the, you know, early layup completions have gone away is, if you look at how often he is throwing the ball away and or having passes batted down. So those are incompletions where he's not actually targeting a receiver. That can mean everybody's covered. That can mean he's not seeing it well and he gets flushed and he's got to throw it out of bounds. That can mean he's kind of hemmed into the pocket and to avoid a sack, he does something, right? Weeks 1 through 7, he had 7 of those. So an average of 1 per game. Weeks 12 through 16, weeks 8 through 12, he's got 16 of those. So you're talking about over 3 per game. So that's very, very different. And that just tells me, again, another statistical way of saying they're being solved a little bit throwing the football. But as much as this is a system issue, and it's not all Daniels, it also has to be acknowledged. We're the same show that did nothing but heap praise on him, talk about him as rookie of the year, talk about him as MVP. People got to just tough it up here and put their big boy pants on. He has not played nearly as well over the last several weeks. Plenty of reasons for that. But when is the last time that you would say he had a really strong passing performance or like looked really good as a passer?
Baltimore to me. I know the numbers ended up being against Chicago good. I mean, added with the Hail Mary, but you're still talking about he was 50% for most of that game. And, you know, I know there were drops in there. I know there were, but he didn't look as sharp to me. First game post-injury.
He was really good in the Giants game, but it was also really easy if you remember in that game. Like, he made 2 exceptional throws. He made the touchdown throw right before the half to Jaden Daniels. That was brilliant. And he had that throw.
To Terry, you mean?
Who did I say?
You said Jaden Daniels.
He threw to himself.
He Bugs Bunny'd it.
You don't remember that play?
I don't.
He threw it. He ran really fast. He caught it, and he scored.
That would be incredible.
It was all over SportsCenter.
Oh, that was a big play.
I can't believe you didn't hear
that's
about
right.
it. Yeah, it was to Terry in the corner of the end zone right before the half. One of his better throws of the year. And he had a really nice throw to Noah Brown kind of over top of a sinking linebacker, if I remember, like in a hole shot there. And those two throws stand out. On a day where otherwise he was fine. I think the rest of the day he was 13 of 21 passing. So I'm not saying he was great, but like just as an example, the PFF passing grade that day was his best single passing grade since the Cardinals game. So, but I would say he's got really one very strong passing performance, in my opinion, since the Ravens game. Which is to say that the Ravens game was game 6.
Yep.
So that's Bucks where he was had his worst passing game of the year. He just kind of didn't want to do it. The Giants game, first half of the game was really bad. Second half was much better. But his one of his 3 lowest passing grades of the season, which he had his worst passing grade and then his 3rd lowest passing grade in those first 2 weeks. Then the Cincinnati game, which is the high water mark still. Agree?
Yes.
That is one of the best passing games anybody's had all year long.
Not just him, anybody.
Arizona the next week was splendid. I would say that was probably his 2nd best game. If you remember, he went 26 of 30 that day for 230 on the road. 4 incompletions. I thought he was just automatic. Cleveland was more okay. He missed things. He actually had his first struggles in that game. But if you remember,
especially early, yeah.
He had that crazy play where he threw it to Terry downfield.
Uh-huh.
And he made like 2 or 3 just ridiculous plays in that game that made up for it. But that was probably the first time in 3 weeks we saw him scuffle. Then he had the really good game against Baltimore in the pocket where they didn't let him run. And he almost beat them from the pocket and then got hurt against Carolina. So that's 6 games, Bucks, Giants, Bengals, Cardinals, Browns, Ravens, where 4 in a row after the early 2 weeks, he was humming. Then he gets hurt against Carolina. And since then, you're saying you don't think he's really had any dynamic passing performances, and I'm saying he's had 1. So we're getting to a point here where he's kind of living on September. He's living on that Bengals game, that Cardinals game still. That was week 3 and 4 of the season. It's week 12.
I mean, to me, I, whether you want to call them excuses, I think it's explanations. I think he wasn't totally 100% right physically, or was having, you know, sort of extended flaws or setbacks or mechanical issues because of it. I think there was maybe an aggravation of the Pittsburgh game here and there. Whatever. That's water under the bridge. I think the 10-day layoff was great for him. Physically, he looked the best he has to me since that first part of the Carolina game when he got hurt. Like, that's who I think of. That's what I think of when I think of Jaden Daniels. That fluid, easy, I got the accelerator button when I need it, but I'm not in a hurry, but I'm gliding past everybody.
By far the healthiest he's been. He looked
right again. So that's the part to me is a separation from the previous couple of weeks. So I offer that.
Hold on before you move on from that. How many weeks are you giving him there? Just like Chicago, Giants, Pittsburgh, Philly?
No, so I think he was bugged by things in Giants and Chicago. I do think there was something happened in the Pittsburgh game, but I think maybe changed.
I'm sounding like a jerk. I don't mean to. You're just kind of making up that you think something happened against the Steelers.
Sure.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's what I think. We haven't heard anything like that.
No, we haven't heard it.
Theory is those two games where he played well, or better, I guess. Like, he was pretty fine.
Yeah.
And when he started to play badly, something happened.
When he didn't look the same to me physically, that's when I'm going, alert, something happened. So that's where I'm going there. It's circumstantial evidence. I haven't heard anyone say TJ Watt hit him in X way.
Gotcha.
Maybe that's out there. I have no idea. But to me, this is the healthiest he's looked in a while. So from a passing perspective, I don't think it was bad necessarily. But to me, what it looks like so many times is it's either – maybe he misses something. It's an NFL quarterback. You're going to miss certain things, whether he's not looking a certain way when a receiver's open or otherwise. But far too often, it looks like the option of where it's supposed to go has been taken away. And now what do we do? Right? So some of those scrambles, they happen. And they're happening because option one or maybe option two aren't there and he's got to escape. Sometimes the scramble happens because there's pressure when there probably shouldn't be. Somebody gets beat or the defense has something mugged up or has kind of a good call against you. Or otherwise, it just seems like the easy options, the layups are gone. So you're not seeing those 90% completion days, those 85% completion days, 80% as he was doing through the first month plus of the season. There's only been a couple of games that's sub 60, Pittsburgh game, Chicago. But for the most part, he's been in a regular, normal, good completion percentage territory. Just tells you that the easy isn't there as much anymore. And, you know, guys aren't separating the same way. And I think he doesn't trust things anymore the way that he did early. Because it's basically, if a coach is telling you, do this, and that'll be open, and then it is, you go, sure, I believe in that. Well, now when he's telling you, do this, and it's going to be open, and it's not, you don't trust what your eyes are seeing anymore. It's just kind of my anecdotal look from afar.
So for me, I just look at this thing and I go, okay, how often am I going, man, are you lucky you've got one of the best in the league after a throw? Or after, you know, a game, do I go, he did a bunch of things. And I'm separating the running for a second. I'm just talking about him throwing the football. I don't think there was anything in this Cowboys game that made me feel that way. Where I go, darn, you're lucky you had Daniels and not league average starting quarterback. Who, pick a guy for that. Is that Geno Smith?
Yeah.
Or something like that?
Geno's plus, but yeah, it's fine.
Like, at what point yesterday, throwing the football, were you better off because you had Daniels than Geno? Just as an example. I don't think that existed. Like, even the 86-yard touchdown to Terry, which was a fine throw wide-open receiver, that was a Terry play and a terrible Cowboys play, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was clinical, fantastic, textbook in the hurry-up offense series that they ran to get to 17 points to cut it to within a field goal before the Turpin kick return. I thought he was really, really sharp, really, really good. Made a few of his best throws of the day there. But it just overall, like, I'm sorry, if you have 92 net passing yards with 5 minutes to play, as a passer, you had a bad day. I'm just going to feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean it's all your fault. I'm not suggesting it is. But it was not a good day. The Philly game, you saw it, I saw it. It was his worst of the season, in my opinion. Do you think there was a worse passing game than that for him?
No. I know you'll have numbers in different games that weren't as good, but if you're there, we were there, you could see it. There was no trust. There was no drive on the ball. There was no touch. There was no accuracy. I'm going, this is not the person we fell in love with.
Right.
You know what I mean? They've changed.
The Steelers game was when there was drops, so I didn't think he was as bad as his 50% completion. But that was not a special game in any way. I'd have to go back and find, you know, throw by throw. I don't remember. I don't have my notes on me. But, like, how many times in that game did he make a big-time throw, or did you feel like he just did something that the average quarterback couldn't do? PFF in that game assigned him one big-time throw, mm-hmm. just as an example. He had two in the Giants game. I referenced those. But largely, I guess my point is, they're going to be at their best when he is dynamic as a runner and when they have him feeling comfortable and confident and lighting it up from the pocket as a passer. And neither of those two things are happening in this moment. And it's been a few weeks where you want to see him growing, right? The era with these rookies right now, like Caleb Williams with the new coordinator, is getting better as the year goes along. Bo Nix is getting better as the year goes along. Drake May is getting better as the year goes along. And we haven't, he's the one guy, and it's because he started out so great.
It started off at such a level that's unsustainably
great. You weren't going to be able to be better than that.
Yeah.
I grant you that. And he wasn't even going to be able to sustain it. So it's not even like a slight regression isn't okay, but it's going the other way. And I'm not worried. I'm not bothered. But I am just curious whether people feel like there's something they're seeing that's out of his purview. Is it just everyone around him? That it seems to me like that's what people want it to be. And that's fine if that's true. The O-line hasn't been as good. The receivers haven't been as good. And we're blaming Cliff Kingsbury for a regression. But does that mean his hands are clean then? Like he's just the Jaden that played against the Bengals is walking out on the field every week and it's just not working out because he's a victim of what's going on around him? 800-636-1067 is the number if you want to hop in on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Dan Orlovsky just did a pretty good breakdown on Monday Night Countdown, which oddly is already started. Maybe it's NFL Live from the Countdown desk. I don't know what ESPN does. But we'll play that audio for you in the 5 o'clock hour. We got Jay Gruden coming up in 12 minutes. But Orlovsky went through some of the throws and the decisions yesterday from Daniels with film where McLaurin's open. No, he's coming back to the football. He's there. And Daniels just chose to go somewhere else. And the point is, you got a guy that is your best wide receiver pretty clearly one-on-one. Let's go to him more often. And maybe that's something where Kingsbury's just got to sit down and kind of go over that with Daniels. They were doing it early in the year.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that. But in the flow of the game, you start locking in on Noah Brown. You like the matchup against whoever that corner was, number 31 maybe. Then you like going against Deron Bland or something. But you got to give McLaurin chances. We're talking about some of Daniels' performances recently and the outing yesterday. Had just 92 net passing yards with 5 minutes to go. Gibbs is in Connecticut on G&D. What's up, Gibbs?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Hey, buddy.
So, yesterday, I think Daniels is, I mean, obviously he's not playing as good as he was, but I think he's honestly fine. I think it's the O-line. They look so off-tempo. They have a run play, and half the line's going one way, one is going fast-tempo, one's going slow-tempo. They can't even run a draw right. It seemed like Micah Parsons, and I think his name is Osat Ejewuzie or whatever his name was, the D lineman. They just get through every single time. It seems like the O line, maybe it's the tempo from not having the practice rest, but something just seems really off there.
So it was strange because they had all the time in the world to prepare for the game. And as you said, looked like they were surprised by what Dallas did. Dallas brought Micah Parsons inside more often than I think Washington was expecting.
Uh-huh.
That was their adjustment to how Kingsbury operates by chipping the edge rushers. So advantage them in the coaching matchup there. But yeah, they definitely won from the interior. I mentioned this earlier in the show if you guys are just getting in the car. You know, the Commanders are not giving up more pressure than they were. And the line and the pass pro is not worse than it was. If you look at the PFF numbers on percentage of dropbacks under pressure, through week 6, Daniels was pressured on 35% of dropbacks. And weeks 8 through 12, it's 32%. It's actually a little better. But I do think it's interior, meaning in his face,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to from the edge where he can kind of run away from it, which seems significant.
I think that's a huge factor. Again, the adjustments. This is pro sports. This is the highest level we got. There's no higher league. So I remember playing years ago with Mark Teixeira, right? One of the great major leaguer, not quite a Hall of Famer, but a Hall of really damn good. One of the most leading home run hitters among switch hitters in league history. Remember the first week, nobody threw him anything but off-speed stuff off the plate outside. He was rolling over, hitting ground balls, and swinging and missing and popping stuff up. And everybody on the team was like, oh, he's not that good. He's overhyped. I said, just wait. I bet you figures it out. And then he did. And led the universe in home runs that season. Hit nothing but oppo bombs for the better part of a couple weeks till they adjusted. You adjust to the adjustment. That's what is missing right now, quite frankly. They're taking things away. It's a trade-off. That means something has to be open. There's going to be something different that's going to pop if you're able to kind of counterpunch. What you were doing for 2 months, nobody had to answer for. Now they do. What do you do about it?
Let's go to Dave in Woodbridge on Grant and Danny. Hey, Dave.
Hey, guys. One thing I noticed during the whole game, I got so frustrated. The play calling was so predictable. Every time it was run first down. I don't know why we didn't throw like a little West Coast to try to get a little rhythm, a little 4 or 5 yard pass, you know, a little screen. And they loaded the box up. I felt like that was something there for them to take advantage of. But they never allowed Jaden to get hot. And every time he was in third and long.
Felt like it, certainly, right? As the game it's been that way the last few weeks, and all of a sudden your offense is worse. I mean, that to me is the symptom of the disease, right? Like where you're sick inside, so you get a rash, you get snot in your nose. That's the symptom. That's what's going on. It's those third and long. So you live in third and long, your offense gets worse. That's true for every team in the NFL, and that's where Washington's getting to. So those early downs to prevent third and long, that's not what's hitting right now.
They run on first and 10, to his point, more than they throw on first and 10, and I think are top three in the league in percentage of runs on first down. Let's go to Paul in Gaithersburg. Hello, Paul.
Hey, guys. I think there's probably 10 different factors. Some are psychological. There's obviously the Kingsbury effect, but there's also you have a guy come in as a rookie and you tell him he's an MVP, Lamar Jackson. He's going to the Hall of Fame. That affects his psyche. He gets hurt. You play him. You don't sit him. He's not as good when he's hurt. Your ribs affect your throwing motion. That affects the psyche. Here we are, you know, deep into the season, and I think you have a perfect example of what happens to a rookie who's been told he's the greatest. Well, he's frustrated. That happens to anybody, and this is all psychological. He hasn't lost his arm strength or anything like that. It's just something he's going to have to work through, hopefully, because I remember Robert Griffin looked amazing his first year. We thought he was the second coming, right?
Yeah, I think that's an important point, which is to say, I don't think he was reading his press clippings or anything. This guy is a worker, and I think really believe, you know, he's out there grinding. He's one of the first and last to leave. He's doing things the right way. He is a rookie, and there will be ebbs and flows.
Sure.
Caleb Williams has gone through more downs than he has. Bo Nix has gone through, they're both, you know, on 7-5 teams where they've had some really bad moments, some really good moments. I'd make the case that Bo Nix is been on the wrong end of more valleys than Jaden Daniels has. It just so happens right now that this three-game skid and this post-injury kind of valley for him is playing out now all at once, where if you just looked at like how much money all of them have in the bank based on their withdrawals and their deposits, Daniels probably has the most money in the bank. He is narrowly the favorite to win Rookie of the Year because he's had a slightly more impressive, you know, dynamic season, say, than Bo Nix. But it's just that his withdrawals have all come here very recently. And so the timing is Bo Nix is rolling, Williams is on the ascent, and we're seeing Daniels hit the skids a little bit. But I think if we just look at this in totality, you found your answer. You found a guy that could be a long-term solution at quarterback, it would appear. I still worry about durability after, you know, you get tackled, you get a banged-up rib, which happens at the quarterback position, and it just derails several weeks of your season. Like, that's not a good thing for a guy who weighs 200 pounds.
Exactly right.
If that's going to be a thing moving forward. But that's a story for another day. And overall, I think you would have signed up for everything that you've gotten out of the young quarterback.
Agreed.
Through 12 games.
I still feel great that the answer is here. So that's kind of what I'm looking for, and it's what I got.
Let's talk to Jay Gruden next, see what he sees from Daniels in this offense and how would he fix it. You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan.